Chat with Traders, episode 24.
The biggest secret of the best traders in the world is that they're just like everyone else. However, they've worked hard to learn the markets and discover what works and what doesn't. But how can you hear about these journeys and get in on the strategies and tactics they use? You can do it by listening to Chat with Traders. Here's your host, Aaron Fifield.
Hey guys, what's up? Welcome back to episode 24 of the Chat with Traders podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. It's great to have you here. So on the show this week, my guest is Ivan Hoff, an equities trader of 10 years who tackles the market with a swing trading approach to capture powerful short-term gainers that may run anywhere between 3 to 10 days. While swing trading is his bread and butter, Ivan also allocates a portion of his capital to position trading when he has a reason to believe that the trend will continue for the longer term. He's also written several books, including The 5 Secrets to Highly Profitable Swing Trading and The Next Apple, which was a collaboration with Howard Lindzen, who is the co-founder and CEO of StockTwits. Plus, Ivan is regularly featured in The Wall Street Journal, Bloomberg, Yahoo Finance, Traders Magazine, and he's also a familiar face amongst the StockTwits community. Now continue listening to learn about Ivan's trading methodology, one of his high probability swing setups, the importance of following industry momentum, and a whole lot more. Hey Ivan, what's up man? How's your week been?
Oh, it's been really well. How are you, Aaron?
I'm very well. Ivan, thanks so much for coming on the show, man. It's a pleasure to be speaking with you. I'm thrilled to have you on, and again, thank you very much.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
My pleasure. So, Ivan, if you could, give us the rundown on where you've come from, sort of how you got into trading, and what was it about trading that really appealed to you?
Okay, so I was born in Bulgaria. That's Southeast Europe, just north of Greece and Turkey. And, people there and just in Europe in general don't really have that stock market culture ingrained in them. Like most people there invest their money in real estate, their own business, or just keep their money at the bank where they pay 3-4%. So no one really invests their money or trades in the stock markets there. So pretty much I entered the stock market during one of the biggest bull markets in financial history for emerging markets. So whatever happened to Nasdaq in the later 90s pretty much happened to emerging markets in the early to mid 2000s, percentage wise, of course. Like I'll give you a quick example. The Bulgarian stock market went up like more than 2000% between 2002 and 2007. So I opened an account there with my savings, and pretty much at the beginning, I wasn't really trading. It was more of a buy and hold approach and just watch my account grow. And then in late 2005, I moved to the States to study. And this is when I opened my first trading account and started to dabble into trading more. Pretty much that's how I started. And at the beginning, of course, the States market was very different than the Bulgarian market. Because of liquidity, of course, the Bulgarian market wasn't liquid at all. It's a really small market, and you can't really trade. The U.S. market, it's the biggest market in the world. So pretty much anyone who trades for a living anywhere in the world, you trade the U.S. market, pretty much, the U.S. stock market.
Yeah, absolutely. So what were your early experiences like? I mean, did you hit kind of like some beginner's luck to start off with, or did you, blow up multiple accounts? What were the first couple of years of trading like for you?
Well, I would say that I was really lucky, first growing my account really, really fast on the Bulgarian stock market, and then moving in the States in 2005, 2006, when it was a really good bull market here too, by the time I moved. And of course, at the beginning, I made all the mistakes that all beginning traders do several times over. Like at the beginning, for example, I did not have an edge. Luckily, I found a few very good financial blogs at the time and learned a lot from them. I found IBD Investors Business Daily. I was reading the Kirk Report. I was reading StockB. And out of there, I actually developed one of my major setups that I use even today. It's based on post-earnings announcement drift. So pretty much it means that any company that receives favorable market reaction to its earnings reports tend to continue to trend in the same direction for at least several weeks after that gap up or down. So based on that, I developed my first major setup.
Okay, that's excellent. We might get into that a little bit more a bit later in the interview. But just sort of looking back on that time, you mentioned you made sort of a number of mistakes over a game. What were sort of some of those big mistakes that kind of stood out and you found sort of the most challenging to overcome?
Well, I think one of the biggest one was position sizing. I was taking too big positions without really taking into account the capital at risk. You know, this might be really suitable occasionally for someone with a lot more experience, but not for someone that is, you know, just starting out. Trading too big could mean making a lot of money sometimes in a crappy market environment if you pick the right stocks, or it could mean losing a lot of money in an excellent market environment because you happen to pick the one or two stocks that did not move. So this time I used to grow my account like a 30-50% in a month or two during strong uptrends, and then I gave back most of it when the inevitable correction came. So I know everyone makes money in an uptrading market, but not everyone keeps that money when the correction comes. So that was a big struggle for me initially, just to learn how to time the market properly, because there is no trading approach or no trading setup has a 100% success rate. So you really have to take into account the right market environment when you need to pounce and make all of your money, and to know when just to step aside or just to use a different setup for that specific market environment.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, you mentioned their position sizing, so that was sort of one of the biggest things that, you know, you were challenged with. How did you sort of overcome that? I mean, were you maybe taking less trades, or were you just sort of, you know, risking less on per trade, or, you know, like how did you overcome that?
Well, I found a much more scientific way to approach position sizing based on capital at risk. So nowadays I risk anywhere between 25 basis points and 100 basis points, which is 1% of my capital per trade, depending on the setup and on the market environment. So I know exactly how much I have at risk every time.
Okay, that's really good. So let's get into a little bit about sort of your actual trading approach that you've sort of adapted and that you're trading today. So if you could, just give us an overview of your approach to the markets.
Sure. So pretty much I'm a swing trader. My holding period is anywhere between 3 to 10 trading days. So why a swing trader? Because I believe there is the 80-20 rule that exists in the market. Most stocks spend in a range, about 80% of their time they spend in a range, and the majority of their move happens in only 15-20% of the trading days. So the purpose of swing trading is just to capture that 15-20% of the time when the stocks are actually moving. So I buy on strength and I sell on strength.
Okay, and would you say that you've sort of been a swing trader since day one, or is this sort of something you've slowly sort of gravitated towards and it's now kind of stuck with you?
No, at the beginning, the first couple of years that I was struggling to find an actual edge, so the first few years I was actually trading only one setup that was based on post-earnings announcement drift. It was a pretty much anticipation setup when I was looking for stocks that gapped and then consolidated through time, and pretty much I bought that consolidation in expectation of a continuation of that move. And then over time, I added more setups to my portfolio of setups. You know, I started trading breakouts and pullbacks, and I started taking into account factors like industry momentum, float, individual stock momentum.
Okay, sure. And you sort of brought up an interesting point there, was sort of how you just sort of focused on one particular setup for the first couple of years. Do you think that sort of contributed to the success or the level of success you've been able to reach today by just focusing on one sort of setup while you were sort of learning the ropes?
Absolutely. I think at the beginning, and not only at the beginning, less is more. People have to, I think, have to find just one great setup and learn absolutely everything about it and when to trade it. And then over time, as you really become really good at it, you can start adding, you know, new setups, because, you know, that particular setup that I trade is not, it's not good for all market environments. So, for example, it's not good for during market corrections. So over time, you start to add, as you get better and better, you start to add new setups for the different market environments.
Yeah, that's great. That's really excellent. So just before we go any further, what markets are you sort of most active in, and what are you trading? Are you trading sort of stocks, options, ETFs? Like, just tell us a little bit about that.
U.S. equities, that's it. Nowadays, I only trade U.S. stocks.
Okay, sure, sure. As a swing trader, like, what would you say is your primary aim? Like, what opportunities are you aiming to exploit in the market?
What opportunities? So, as I say, stocks move in cycles. They spend the majority of their time in a range, and I'm looking to win those stocks when they're out of that range, so I capitalize on their move. So opportunity cost is a really big thing for me. Any capital that I allocate to one stock, I cannot allocate to another. So it's, for me, it's really important to be in stocks that are actually moving at the time, so I maximize my capital allocation.
Okay, sure. That's really good. So, again, just as a swing trader, how connected to the market are you during actual trading hours? Like, do you watch the intraday action, or are you mostly analyzing data after the close each day?
Well, I do both. So some of my signals trigger intraday. So I take them intraday. So during the day, I mean, I don't watch every tick, of course. I run a bunch of screens that show up certain results. And if I like the setup, you know, I'll take it intraday.
Okay, excellent. So what are some of the things that you really look for to identify big short-term gainers, like, before they actually move? Like, what is it that often drives these powerful short-term market moves?
So the single most influential factor for short-term moves is industry momentum. If you're in the right industry, you're very likely, you know, to capture a stock that that is likely to move a lot. So being in the right industry could be the difference between, you know, getting a breakout that will get an immediate follow-through, or getting a breakout that is going to fade very quickly. You know, it could be the difference between getting into stock that is going to move 20% in a couple of weeks, or getting in a stock that is going to move, you know, 5%. So being in the right industry is the single most important thing, you know, a trader could do. So I'm really paying attention to the hot industries, you know, of the month. Like recently, we've seen huge moves in cybersecurity, in semiconductors, in biotech. So those are the industries that I've been focusing my capital and attention. And, you know, those industries change pretty much every few weeks. So you really need to pay attention to that, to industry momentum.
Okay, so once you identify an industry that's picking up some momentum, how do you sort of drill down on which stocks you're actually going to place trades on?
So the first, you know, from my perspective, the best way to figure out which industries are hot is just to, you know, I run a few screeners that are based on on various criteria, on momentum on various timescales. And based on the, and if certain industry has a large number of setups that are showing up, this is the industry that I need to focus. And of course, I'll give a priority to recent IPOs, because recent IPOs, they have a very small float. Like most companies, initially sell only between 7 and 15% of their shares outstanding to the market. So during the first 6 months, they could move a lot because of their small float. I mean, if you look at some of the biggest movers on a month to 6 months time frame, you see that so many of them are actually recent IPOs, and that's exactly because of two reasons, and because they're small float and because they belong to a currently hot industry. You know, those are the two most defining factors for their outperformance.
Right. Okay. That's really interesting. So you kind of touched on this before, but if we could just go into it a little deeper, would you be able to run us through your ideal setup for a high probability swing trade, like on an individual stock, and at what point you might enter into that as well?
Sure. So it belongs to, let's say, to a hot industry, let's say currently to, you know, biotech or semiconductor. And it has an initial leg up, so it has an already established momentum, and then it has spent some time consolidating, usually through time or through price. So there is a slight pullback. So I'm looking for the 5-day moving average to be trading above the 20-day moving average, and then I'm looking for something I call a pivot move. So I'm not just looking for a pivot level that has to be taken out to enter. I'm looking for a pivot move. I'm looking for a certain size of a move. For example, a 2% breakout to new 20-day high in order to enter. And that's it, pretty much.
Okay. So when you said you look for the first leg, what sort of time frame are you looking at there? Like, how long would a leg typically take to form? Like, what sort of size are we talking about here?
It could be anywhere between 1 week and 3 months, or even 6 months.
Okay, right. Okay, sure. So for argument's sake, let's just say you identify, I don't know, maybe like 20 of these setups, or maybe other setups that look equally appealing. How do you go about filtering out which trades you will and won't take? I guess another way of asking this is when you have more signals than capital. So how do you decide which trades to act on? Because you can't take every trade, obviously.
Of course. I mean, I'll just let some go. And I'll give a priority to stocks that belong to a currently hot industry and to recent IPOs, just because they tend to move a lot faster. If you study, you know, the best performing stocks on a 1 to 4 week time frame, you'll figure out, you know, as I already repeated several times, I guess, that you know, they're either recent IPOs or they belong to a hot industry. So of course I'll give priority to those two. And then if by the time I'm in 7 to 8 stocks, I'm pretty much already fully invested, so I'll hold them, you know, anywhere between 3 to 10 days, depending on the price action. And you know, if a better opportunity shows up, I'll sell those that are not acting as well, and I'll just reallocate money.
Okay, right. So you mentioned the 3 to 10 days a couple of times. Like, how did you discover this was an effective holding time for your approach?
Based on studying past winners. So I meticulously study past winners on several different time frames, on a week, 2 week, a month, a quarter, 6 months. So every day I study the best performers, you know, stocks that were up more than 10% for the week, more than 20% for the month. And I'm studying their charts, and I've been doing that for years. And I figure out that most swing legs, you know, last anywhere between 3 to 10 days, and then there is another consolidation. And, you know, then the same stock could spend, you know, a few days to a few weeks consolidating through time or price, and then it will break out again, and, you know, you can enter again.
Okay, that's interesting. So let's say a stock, you've been holding a position for 10 days, and it's still moving in your favor. It's not really showing too much of a sign of weakness. Are you likely to still cut that, or maybe you're going to hold on to that?
This is very unusual, and you know, most 80% of my trades are swing trades, but I also have some you know, longer term positions that I hold for multiple weeks, and you know, I for my longer term positions, I pay attention to weekly charts. So if a stock has a really good weekly chart and has a story that I really understand and is acting price wise properly, I might, you know, hold it for multiple weeks, even multiple months. But that's a relatively smaller portion of my capital that I allocate to that. You know, you can call that, I guess, position trading. It's a little bit different than swing trading. Swing trading is 3 to 10 days.
Yeah.
And you're looking to capture, you know, 5 to 30% quick moves.
Yeah, exactly. I've got a few questions around your sort of longer term approach that I'm keen to ask you as well. But just still on the topic of swing trading, so you've written a book titled The 5 Secrets to Highly Profitable Swing Trading. I know we can't go into huge depth on each of those five topics, obviously, but would you be able to briefly touch on each one of, you know, the five secrets? And if anyone is listening, I mean, they can obviously dig deeper and grab the Kindle from Amazon, but would you be able to give us just an overview of what the five secrets to highly profitable swing trading might be?
Sure, sure. I mean, it's a really simple book. I think it's simple for a reason, so even people without any trading experience could get it real quick. So pretty much in chapter one, I talk about when to buy, and I describe my perfect swing setup. And I've already talked about it here. Looking for an initial leg up, then some form of consolidation. We have the 5-day, the price of trading above the 5-day moving average, and then the 5-day above the 20-day. And then you could either buy a breakout at least 2% move to new 20-day high, or you could buy in anticipation of a breakout if that particular setup meets certain criteria. For example, if that particular stock has recently had like a really good earnings surprise and a favorable market reaction, and if the market environment is right, you can buy in anticipation before the breakout. Like, this is really an approach that, as your account grows in size, you could take. You have to buy in anticipation of a breakout because there's not enough liquidity to chase after most breakouts. So in chapter two, I talk about when to sell. And pretty much in swing trading, it's good to sell on strength because we are only looking to capture that quick 3 to 10 day like up or down, and just to avoid the dead periods when the stocks consolidate through time or through price. Then in chapter three, I talk about how to improve the odds in your favor, how to capture bigger winners pretty much. And there I talk about industry momentum, why is it so important. I talk about IPOs, and I talk about individual stock momentum. In chapter four, I talk about the so-called fourth secret. I talk about risk management, talk about position sizing and how important it is. And in chapter five, I talk about market timing, why and how to time the market, and when to risk 1% of your capital and when to risk, you know, 0.25%, and when to sit pretty much on the sidelines. So it's really, really sweet, really short book. You can pretty much read it in probably an hour.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, well, I'll put a link to that in the show notes. So if anyone's keen to check it out, they can pick up a copy of it. But moving along to sort of what you touched on before, like your position trading approach, so separate from swing trading. From your experience, like, what do the big winners have in common? How do you identify stocks that are likely to rally longer than sort of your 3 to 10 days that you look for when you're swing trading? Is it, again, sort of momentum within an industry, or is there something more to it?
Well, there are several factors. One of them is earnings growth. Usually the best long-term performers are the stocks that consistently report, you know, high earnings and sales growth. Another important factor is general price momentum, which pretty much is a reflection of people's expectations about the future. There were so many recent examples like Tesla Motors or Yelp. Those stocks tripled and quadrupled before they reported a single profitable quarter. So the market in this case was forward-looking. It was expecting those stocks to do very well in the future. Of course, in many occasions, the market won't be right. Since the market is a discounting mechanism, in many cases, it will discount future events that will never happen, you know, that happen all the time. And once the market, you know, gets tired of waiting for those companies to actually deliver what it is expecting, you see a correction, as we saw in Yelp. You know, it's not uncommon to see a stock that will go up 300-400% in, let's say, in a period of a year and two, and then it'll give back 50-80% of that move in 6 months. You know, it usually happens to stocks where the market has had very high expectations, and you could have ridden those moves just based on price momentum. And then, as I said, at some point the market grows tired of waiting for those companies to actually deliver what it has already been priced, and, you know, and there is a correction. So another way to capture bigger moves is to wait for a market correction. If you study some of the best performers in a 3 to 12 month time frame, you see that so many of them start their move immediately after let's say 8 to 15% market correction, which used to happen every year before. We haven't had that in a few years. So the stocks that show relative strength during that correction, the stocks that manage to, let's say, move sideways or even attempt to break out as the general market is dropping, you know, 6, 7, 10%, those are the stocks to pay attention to, because as soon as the general market bounces, those stocks will lead and outperform by a mile. And, you know, the last bigger correction that we had was, you know, last September. And exactly at that time, I think the S&P dropped like, what, 7-8%? And exactly at that time, there were quite a few biotech stocks that just didn't move. They just went sideways. They built new bases. And as soon as the market bounced, those stocks, pretty much every single one of them, went up between 50 and 200% in the next 3 months. So I think for most, for position traders, for longer term investors, the best thing that could happen to you is a market correction, because, you know, pretty much the safest time to enter the market is right after those correction, when the general market is starting to move up and those stocks are starting to break out on new 50-day highs or new 52-week highs. And, you know, if you concentrate all your effort to that specific time, I think you'll do really well without having to watch the market every day. And actually, you know, speaking of books, I actually have a recent book that I published exactly on position trading, on longer term, trend following, that exactly deals with that subject. And I co-authored that with Howard Lindzen. It's called The Next Apple. It's also on Amazon. I think it's also really, really good read if you have the time.
Yeah, for sure. We'll put a link to that one also in the show notes. I'm sure that would be a really good book to get into. Something you sort of brought up at the beginning of that answer there, and thanks for going into so much depth with it, is you mentioned higher earnings, consistently higher earnings. For someone who doesn't follow fundamentals too much and sort of, you know, news like that type of thing, how do they determine whether earnings are higher than sort of what is expected?
For example, a company that used to grow at, you know, 10-12% quarter over quarter earnings and sales, if that company suddenly reports a quarter where it has, you know, a 200% earnings growth and 100% sales growth, you know, something major has just happened apparently with that company. And this company, and usually that huge acceleration in earnings is just like a cockroach. You know, there's never only one quarter. There are usually several quarters that follow. And if you study some of the best performing stocks, you know, on a longer time frame, you know, they really grew their earnings at, you know, triple digits. You know, that's natural. You know, companies that grow their earnings and sales at such pace usually do very well.
Okay, and another thing you sort of touched on in that same answer was many of these stocks might, you know, run for, you know, 200-300% in the space of a year. What are maybe some giveaways that the trend might be coming to an end? Because obviously you want to pocket as much of your gain as possible. So is there any giveaway that the trend might be starting to turn down?
There could be several different factors that you know, could give you a clue. First of all, you never know. You could never know how far a trend could go and how long it will last. But just in general, if you see like a huge counter trend move, let's say the stock suddenly drops 8% down in a day on a huge volume, you know, that has a major distribution day, you know, a day like that usually wakes people from their dream. All of a sudden, the fear of losing becomes bigger than the fear of missing out. And, you know, this is usually the beginning of the end. And like when you have like a couple major distribution days like that. And again, if you're a position trader or a long-term trend follower, I think it also makes sense to take some profits on strength. Like, for example, I'm using a weekly RSI. When it gets above 80, I will take some partial profits on some of my position trades. Everyone has his own approach, and then I know a bunch of people that will never sell on strength, that will only sell when on weakness, and they're also doing really well. So everyone has to build, you know, their own approach.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, thanks for bringing that up. So as a question, I'm interested to hear your insights on taking trades that have a worthwhile risk to reward. So what is something entry-level traders should understand about trades that have a good risk to reward before getting into them?
Well, I mean, I could use the phrase tight is good. So look for a tight range. You know, for example, stock that normally trades, let's say a dollar, it's normal daily range. It's all of a sudden the last few days it's spent in a much tighter range, let's say 30 cents range, and look for closes for a couple of days of where the closing price of each of those days is very close to each other. So this is just another ingredient that you can add when you look for a perfect setup. So first of all, you never know how far a stock we'll travel after it triggers. You know, it could travel 5%, it could travel, you know, 20-30%. Of course, that depends on the industry. It is in, on its floats, on the general, on the market cap of the company you're trading. It depends on the general market environment. So in a good trading environment, you know, of course, you get a much bigger move, and you know you can risk 50 cents and then you can make $5 on those 50 cents. In a choppier market environment, you might make only 50 cents on your 50 cents risk. I mean, you never know in advance your actual rewards. All you know is that in that specific trading market environment, your market, your setup has an edge. And let's say out of 10 setups, probably you make money on 7. And out of those 7, you make a lot of money on 2. And on 5, you make, you know, a little bit of money. And those two that where they really go in your favor, you know, they'll pretty much account for 80% of your overall profits.
Sure. Okay. So I read an article the other day, and I think you wrote it on Dr. Brett Steinberger's blog, which I thought was really interesting, and I'd like it if you could share some of that with the listeners. And it was about one of the most practical habits that has helped you as a trader. So what is that practical habit? Would you mind sharing that with us?
Are you talking about studying past winners?
Yeah, it was about going over charts of sort of the best performing stocks on multiple time frames.
Yeah, I already talked about it here. Yeah, every single day I go over the best performing stocks on multiple time frames. So I keep a trading journal, and on that trading journal, you know, I not only review my trades, I only review my missed opportunities, and the missed opportunities of course came from, you know, studying those past winners. So I'm looking for those best performing stocks, let's say on a weekly time frame, and I'm asking myself, why did I miss that move? Because based on studying those past winners, I have built several different screens that I run throughout the day, because I have reverse engineered based on my study of past winners. So I'm looking, why did I miss that move? And should I change my current screen? Should I create a new screen so next time I don't miss it? Even though I know that there's no way I could catch them all, but I'm constantly trying to improve by studying past winners and by keeping a journal and, you know, constantly trying to tinker my screens.
Okay, yeah, that's really good. So, all right, Ivan, well, let's start to wind this down. So let me ask you one of my favorite questions, and that is, what's the top reason you believe why the majority of traders never reach a high level of success? Because often traders sit out with big dreams and plenty of ambition and enthusiasm, but somewhere along the way, this sort of fades out and it doesn't get them there. So where is the disconnect? Like, why do the majority of traders fail?
Why? I think they don't concentrate all their, at the beginning first, most people don't have an edge. And once you find a setup with an edge, most people don't concentrate enough efforts on learning everything about that setup and making it profitable for them. You know, most people just try something, and if they see that it doesn't work, you know, in a few weeks they'll try something else. They constantly jump from one thing to another, and they never really become masters of one particular setup. And I think at the beginning, if you really learn one great setup and just, you know, the first couple of years, just trade specifically that one setup, and of course you have to know when to trade it, because there will be time when you have to sit on the sideline and do nothing, because, you know, your specific setup won't have an edge. If you do that, you know, over time you become really successful, and over time you'll be able to start adding new setups. So at the beginning, you know, less is more. You have to concentrate on that one setup. And there are so many actually working setups that are shared for free in the public domain, or you can get them in a, there's so many really good books. You can get them for really cheap and just, just take a setup from another trader that, you know, is already profitable, and you can tinker it, you know, to your own, you know, lifestyle or based on your own study of past winners.
Yeah, I love that answer. That's really good. You've made a lot of really valuable points in there. So, Ivan, thanks again so much for coming on. You've given some incredible answers and incredible insights. So you've been an awesome guest. Before we bring this to a close, can you share with listeners where they can learn more about you and your trading, and, you know, any sites they should check out?
So I'm active on StockTwits and on Twitter, and I'm using the handle at Ivan Hoff, Ivan H-O-F-F. And I also run a couple of sites. It's ivanhoff.com, and then the other one is socialleverage50.com. And you can, you know, just ping me on Twitter on StockTwits.
Okay, good one. I'll make sure to put links to everything you mentioned there in the show notes at chatwithtraders.com, and just click on episode 24. And just, you mentioned there Social Leverage 50. Just want to give us an overview on what that site's all about?
Yeah, it's a trading service that I run with Howard Lindzen, and it pretty much helps the traders and aspiring investors to be more profitable in the markets, and just to accelerate their learning curve.
Sure, that's really good. So, I mean, check that out. And, again, all the links will be in the show notes. Ivan, thanks so much for coming on, man. Take care, and we'll speak to you soon.
All right. Thank you, man.
You've come to the end of this episode of Chat with Traders, but don't worry, more great episodes are on the way. To stay updated with each great new episode, be sure to subscribe to the podcast in iTunes, and we'd love it if you leave us a rating and review. We'll see you next time on Chat with Traders.